Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? ArcIT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for your architecture firm. The team at ArcIT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with ArcIT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our generous sponsors, BetterHelp and ArcCat.com. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Paul Keskes, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
So good to finally be able to join you, Mark. Really excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here. We've been waiting a while to record this.
We have.
And I'm excited to get your thoughts. Let me introduce you for anybody who may not know you. Paul Keskes is the editor-in-chief at Architizer, one of the world's most influential architecture media platforms. Paul has an impressive background. He's worked as an architect before transitioning to Architizer in 2015, where he progressed through various editorial roles to his current position. At Architizer, Paul leads a team of architectural journalists sharing stories about the world's best buildings and reaching a global audience. His approach combines his architectural expertise with his passion for storytelling, making complex architectural concepts accessible and engaging to a worldwide audience. In today's episode, we're going to be diving into Paul's unique perspective on architecture, his journey from practicing architecture to becoming a leading architectural journalist, and his insights into the future and the future of both architectural media and design and all the technology that's sort of surrounding it. I'm excited about this conversation. Good to have you here, Paul.
Great to be here. Yeah, it's always nice to take a moment to reflect backwards all the way back to the beginning. And I often have to pinch myself. I feel very lucky and privileged to be able to do a job that I love. And yeah, I guess I often describe myself as a recovering architect because being an architect is hard, as everybody will know. But I'm lucky because I get to still enjoy architecture and exploring incredible design and innovation and talking to amazing designers and architects, but without actually having to do the hard task of practice. So yeah, I think I count myself very lucky, but I also hold an admiration and empathy for architects, which has definitely sort of put me in a good place to sit sort of at the cross section of architecture and media. So yeah, and in terms of how everything started for me.
Yeah, I would love to hear your origin story and sort of understand where you started, how you got started, and then how did it bring you to where you are today at Architizer?
Sure. I mean, we could go all the way back to...
Yeah, go all the way back. I want to know the whole story.
You know, it's somewhat of a cliche, but when I was a kid, I was obsessed with Lego and I was obsessed with imagining new worlds and kind of creating things, drawing and modeling things. And, you know, I didn't really think about where that could take me in terms of career. But when I was in my teenage years, I kind of zoned in on architecture as a subject that could combine... I liked the idea that it could combine creativity with more practical skills. And I liked the idea of that challenge. So I went to Edinburgh University and studied architecture there, architectural design. I did my, for those that are familiar with it, the ROBA part one and two in the UK. I did those in Edinburgh. And then I went to London and I worked as an architectural assistant. And while I was there, I studied for my part three, which is the sort of management practice and law section of the architecture licensing process in the UK to become a registered architect. And I finally managed to achieve that in 2011. So that was 8 years of study and 3 degrees. And at that point, I was exhausted already from architecture. So I took some time out. I traveled around the world. I did my very late gap year at that point in my 20s. I came back and I worked as an architect in Leicester in the UK for a period of time. But yeah, I think this is where the sort of transition began, really, because I'd always loved writing and storytelling in different forms. And while I was in architecture, I was in a commercial practice, and everything that we were designing was, I say designing, it didn't really feel like super creative because we were working for big residential developers, and every project was essentially just how many houses can you fit onto this site? How many, you know, plots can we create in this sort of suburban area, various different parts of the UK? And I found that a little frustrating creatively. So I sort of decided to take that opportunity to explore this idea of, you know, maybe I can write about my subject. And just as a hobby, really, I didn't really think that anything could come of it career-wise. But I started a blog. I was writing opinion pieces about buildings I liked and buildings I didn't like in a kind of critical way, but, you know, a little bit entertaining, a little bit funny, I tried to be. During that period, the blog just started out on Facebook. So it was incredibly basic, just Facebook posts. And yeah, the Architizer editor in 2013 spotted a post of mine and reached out to me on Facebook and asked if I'd be interested in writing a column or something like that for Architizer, because they were interested in getting the perspective of architecture from architects, from working architects, from the inside of the industry. And honestly, I thought it was some kind of wind-up. I thought it was a scam because I didn't think that a big, like, inspiring company like Architizer, which I had admired for so long already, I didn't think that they could possibly just be sending me a Facebook message. But it turned out to be real. And so I started to write one article a week for them. I had a kind of a column, an op-ed column for a couple of years, 2013 to 2015, during which time I realized that storytelling and architectural storytelling was probably my calling. I was kind of enjoying my Sunday writing more than I was enjoying Monday to Friday combined. So that kind of like told me something. And I was kind of amazed that I was getting paid to do something that I would have done for free. So I always think that's a good sign if you can find a position like that. And long story short, took a long time to figure out visas and the legal process to get myself from the UK to New York on a working visa. But I was finally able to do that in 2015, at which point I was essentially just an editorial assistant, but the editor left and there wasn't an immediate obvious replacement for the editor. So they sort of said, can you stand in? Can you hold the fort, if you like, whilst we, you know, think about, you know, how we're going to build this team? And I just say yes to everything, even if it isn't necessarily the best idea. So I said yes. And yeah, I just kind of like learned on the job, and I was very fortunate. They gave me time, the Architizer leadership at that point. And yeah, I think they just saw, you know, somebody that's willing to learn and kind of grow in a position, even if, you know, it wasn't my immediate original plan. And the fact that I was an architect before and I now had this sort of passion for the subject really carried me through those early years as I learned the trade of media, the editorial realm. And yeah, slowly I've evolved to become something of a mentor to other writers and other editors. I've got an amazing team. It's very much a team effort, what we do at Architizer. And yeah, found myself here as editor-in-chief, which is a dream because I still sort of feel like I'm learning. I'm still an intern in my mind in this field. So I think that's a probably kind of a healthy attitude to have. But my subject, my knowledge of architecture from when I was practicing, I think still helps. And my enthusiasm, I'm just a huge nerd when it comes to architecture. So that really helps to get me through. And yeah, and then in terms of Architizer, what we do, I think hopefully a lot of readers are already familiar with us, but we're essentially a media platform for architectural journalism, as you say, telling the stories behind the world's best buildings and the people that bring them to life. So, you know, that covers projects and, you know, the amazing architects and the amazing firms that create these projects. But we also are very forward-looking. So we kind of like to look at all the thousands of projects that are in our database, because architects can actually upload their own projects. So there's user-generated content coming into the site. And we're able to look at all of these projects and sort of surface trends and surface, you know, signals and indicators of what are the pioneers, what are the innovators doing now, and what might that tell us about the future of practice. So I think, you know, that's really exciting. You can kind of see an evolution year after year of the types of work that are coming into the platform. And obviously, anything forward-looking is speculative, and we're not sure exactly what's coming next. But I think we get a lot of clues from the incredible creative minds that contribute to the site. So, and our little team, we just do our best to sort of join the dots and figure that out.
As editor-in-chief at Archetizer, what's your day-to-day look like, and what does your team look like?
My day-to-day, I'm really in a position of like looking at more kind of big picture projects now and strategy. So it's in a way a little less routine. It would have been easier to answer that question a couple of years ago, probably. Now it's very much a sort of position of guiding others. But as a team, I think we have a very small editorial team. There's essentially just four of us full-time, but we have an army of incredible freelance writers that contribute as well. And I think, you know, our kind of bread and butter is 2 articles every day that we look to publish, 10 per week. And they vary from collection articles, we call them collections. So that's basically, you know, taking 10 projects or so many projects that are thematically linked, and they might be surfacing a trend or some kind of indicator of the future of architecture. And one of our writers will create a piece around that, and they will sort of show these projects as a series of case studies to educate. It's a combination of education and inspiration for architects. So, you know, it's a very visual medium, very visual platform. And so we'll put these sort of inspirational collections together. We have writers that do amazing op-eds, again, just based on what they're seeing coming in to the platform, what kind of projects are being completed each month. And then we also have an awards program, the A+ Awards. It's the world's largest architectural awards program. And that helps us also to surface the best of the best. We get incredible entries coming in from around the world. And then we'll look at, you know, there's a popular choice vote. So we get hundreds of thousands of people voting for their favorite architecture from around the world. And that kind of gives you another really interesting indicator of, you know, what are people drawn to and why might they be favoring one particular type kind of project or one type of space over another. And we'll, you know, create stories and write op-eds around what we think is going on there, what patterns are being revealed by the leading firms. So yeah, a lot of what we do is really, yeah, just trying to kind of identify those big picture trends, which I think is helpful for architecture firms to sort of see where the industry is heading, not just from a design perspective, but also from a kind of a commercial perspective. For example, there's been a huge rise in submissions in the awards for adaptive reuse projects and renovations and things like this. And there might be some firms out there that are, you know, dedicated, they're doing new builds, and maybe they see there's this big rise in adaptive reuse and things, and maybe that can inform them to sort of pivot their marketing strategy and, you know, focus in and become more specialized or kind of grow their expertise in transforming existing buildings and, you know, thinking about sustainability around that. So yeah, there's kind of that sort of business benefit to kind of paying attention to what's coming out all the time as well.
You had mentioned adaptive reuse and renovations as a trend. What are some other trends that you're seeing now, which is very interesting to see adaptive reuse and renovations using basically reinventing old buildings for new uses at the same time of seeing a technology explosion in our industry? What are some of the other trends that you're seeing today at Archetizer?
That's a great question. I think sustainability is obviously, you know, it's been at the forefront of people's minds in the industry, but I think it's even more so at the forefront of people's minds in general, even if you're not within construction. And I think that's driving a lot of trends. So, you know, they say that the most sustainable building is one that isn't built. So I think that sort of indicates that the move towards adaptive reuse and renovation, especially because the world is so urbanized now, it's actually the buildings in the center of cities are probably more economically valuable to reinvent and transform rather than building on the outskirts in these huge, dense, sprawling cities. But in terms of like other sustainable trends, I think, you know, there's a lot of people kind of experimenting in material innovation related to technology. So thinking about additive design and 3D printing, I think 3D printing, people have been skeptical about it for a long time because it's sort of, you know, seen as a little bit of a gimmick. But now you see, I went to Autodesk University last year, and I think, you know, there are more serious projects and serious studios actually producing 3D printed materials now that are actually, you know, to scale, and they can create modular multi-unit residential buildings. Some of them are actually going up in various parts of the states. I think that's super exciting. And, you know, as soon as you get one or two firms that sort of prove that it's possible and their clients react the right way to these things, then you see, you know, that everybody needs somebody to kind of dip their toe in the water. And then
Right. Once
they've done that, you start to see it more and more commonly. So I think that's going to be something that we see more and more of. And then in terms of technology, AI has exploded. It's been kind of like a crazy year to see, like, it's burst into the mainstream. But I think there's a lot of sort of mystery around it still in terms of how it can be best used or best harnessed. I think a lot of architects will be familiar with, you know, how you can experiment with AI for image generation and sort of the early stage, the early sort of concept design stage, or even just sort of inspiration, ideation around different sort of ideas. But I think there's going to be more practical uses as we move forward in terms of the creative workflow, from taking it from a concept all the way through to construction. There's already certain architects that are sort of harnessing a little bit more control over these AI tools, because when they first sort of exploded onto the scene last year, I think there was an issue around them producing quite random images and not really feeling like you have much control over these renderings that some of these amazing tools produce. But now there's technology that can kind of, it can hold some control over the 3D model, and you're able to apply new materials without changing the form of the building. And, you know, we're just sort of inching towards something that is actually usable and viable in practice. And then I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of tips over into construction too, and, you know, thinking about robotics and thinking about the additive manufacturing of building materials and things like this. I can see the software advancements kind of linking up with the hardware advancements and really transforming the industry in ways that we can't even really imagine yet. But in the next 5 years, I think we could see big changes, because the one thing about the AI revolution is the pace of it is breathtaking. So, you know, where we are now versus 6 months ago is pretty wild. So I think it's changing things. I think it's evolving quicker than when, for example, when CAD was first introduced, when BIM kind of became a thing. I think AI is sort of exponentially quicker in its evolution just because of its very nature. So yeah, all that's to say is, like, this conversation will probably be out of date in 6 months' time, but, you know, that's okay. You know, we can all revisit it in 6 months. And I think, yeah, just keeping on top of these things and kind of continuing to learn about them is probably the best way for us all to go right now.
Yeah, we're recording this in January of 2024. It'll come out a couple of months later. So it'll be interesting to see what has happened in the next couple of months. With AI, there's lots of experimentation going on, right? Everybody's sort of dipping their toe in, as you said. You see some architects fully embracing it and getting very good at the different platforms and understanding the prompts of how to get exactly what they're looking to get, as exact as they can control it. It's not as easy as it looks. I mean, it's easy to plug in some prompts, some description, and get something out, but it's very difficult to get what you want to have come out. Do you have any examples that you've seen through Architizer of projects that have been directly impacted by AI technology at this point?
That's a great question. I think there are tons of spectacular imagery coming out, and some of them have been uploaded to Architizer. And we can see, we actually had a new awards program last summer called the Vision Awards, and it was all for kind of architectural representation. And so that included visualizations, photorealistic visualizations, and more illustrative sort of diagrammatic works, hand drawings, physical models, but also AI-generated images were actually introduced as a separate category for the first time. and we saw some wonderful works entered. I think Refik Anadol is an amazing example of this. He's an artist slash designer slash architect. So he's sitting at the intersection. And yeah, you know, his work is AI driven, but he's really like playing with, his work is complex. So I'm probably going to oversimplify this massively. But when you look at it, it's kind of this incredible canvas. And it's fascinating about, you know, in terms of how the imagery is generated. And it's very dynamic, but it is ultimately kind of a piece of art. And it's actually, you know, on a flat surface. And it's not really kind of like truly linked to the physical real world in terms of, you know, a built project as yet. We do have architecture plus AI introduced into this A+ award season that we're currently on. So I'm very intrigued to see, you know, whether everything we see submitted is in the digital realm or if there's anything that starts to come that is more in the 3D environment and it sort of linking more to the real built world, because the category is eligible for either of these. It's left open deliberately to see what surfaces. But yeah, in terms of architects that I'm seeing kind of make progress towards linking this kind of fantastical image generation with the real world of construction and engineering, there's some great people to follow on LinkedIn. There's a guy called Tim Fu who used to work for Zaha Hadid Architects, but he now has his own practice. But Tim Fu, if you follow him on LinkedIn, you can see some of his amazing work and kind of research on how he's using AI to actually create real world proposals. I'm not sure what stage he's at in terms of like bringing one of those to life, but it's amazing work. There's a couple of others. Stefan Mikulic, I think is his name. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's with the Aki Ingles Group. So he's working for a big name practice and he is out there experimenting with AI in so many different ways. And Omar Nure, there's a few others. But yeah, I think everything is still in that highly experimental phase. And I think a lot of this is because the reality of architecture is it's technical in the extreme and there are legal and sort of health and safety aspects to built construction that, you know, it's going to take a little bit more time for us to sort of bridge the gap. Using AI for design ideation is one thing, but, you know, using it in a way that is going to actually help translate into a real building. I think, you know, if you're a graphic designer, AI has already blown your industry out of the water. But I think with architecture, it's a little bit slower just because architecture is complicated. And I think we've seen that with building information modeling, right? It's like there are still many practices that don't do BIM, even after 20 years of Autodesk. I guess we should all use it all the time. So yeah, it's kind of like, you know, we're quite notorious for slow adoption, but there are definitely people making moves out there. And I think I recommend looking at these people on LinkedIn because they do a lot of their experiments sort of on the side of practice, more as individuals rather than firms, rather than as representatives of their firms. So yeah, kind of looking out for those people, it can give you a really good idea of what can actually be achieved at the present moment. And then next week, they'll come up with something completely different because there'll be brand new tools and they'll be the first to be experimenting with them. So it's quite nice to sort of piggyback off somebody else's experiments. That's what I'm doing because I'm a writer and a journalist and I don't have time to actually do design experimentations too often. So I take on the role of a kind of observer and a storyteller for some of these people.
We'll have links to all of the people that Paul suggested that we look at on the show notes. So just go to the show notes and we'll have links to their work. Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Architects, listen up. Is something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Regardless if you have a clinical mental health issue like depression or anxiety, or if you're just a human who lives in this world and is going through a hard time, therapy can give you the tools to approach your life in a very different way. I know this community of small firm architects very well, and I see many of you struggling. That's why I reached out to this episode's sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp is a platform that makes finding a therapist easier because it's online, it's remote. And by filling out just a few questions, BetterHelp can match you with a professional therapist in as little as a few days. It's easy to sign up and get matched with a therapist. There's a link in the show notes. It's betterhelp.com/architect. Just use that link, betterhelp.com/architect. Clicking that link helps support this podcast, but it also gets you 10% off your first month of BetterHelp. So you can connect with a therapist and see if it helps you. If you need someone to talk to, consider online therapy with BetterHelp. Click the link in the show notes or visit betterhelp.com/architect. That's betterhelp.com/architect. Thank you to BetterHelp for supporting this podcast and for supporting our community of small firm architects. For over 30 years, ARCAT has been providing AEC professionals with high quality and up-to-date building product information. Today, ARCAT.com is much more than a product catalog, with BIM, CAD, and specifications created in collaboration with manufacturers. Beyond that, ARCAT.com also offers lead data, continuing education resources, newsletters featuring the latest projects and products, and don't forget, detailed podcasts. ARCAT.com is truly the one-stop shop for everything architecture. Try it out. Go to ARCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com. It's very interesting hearing you talk about sort of the experimental phase of AI and the images and the renderings that are being developed and not really directly impacting built work yet. And it reminds me of my time when I was in architecture school, Daniel Libeskind, and you mentioned Zaha Hadid, even Tom Main of Morphosis. You saw all those architects early on in their careers doing very creative artistic renderings, right? Before they were building things, they were experimenting with what forms could be through their own imagination. And then a decade later, they're building these buildings that they imagined 10 years earlier that they thought were impossible. They were just, you know, dreams on renderings. And then they built them. And now you have the work of Zaha and Libeskind and to see the work that they're building today. And so it'll be very interesting to follow these architects that are experimenting with AI and doing these amazing renderings and images to see what ultimately that evolves to become, right? The type of architecture that we may see a decade from now that will be inspired by the work that's being developed today using AI technology.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've named a few people there, but I think something that's sort of dramatically different around this sort of AI revolution that we're experiencing, and it's sort of also the source of a little bit of fear in the creative industry,
yes,
is the fact that it is so accessible. And because a lot of it is text-driven and you can use natural language to sort of create a new image, suddenly it's widening the pool of potential creators in a way I don't think we've ever seen before. But from my point of view, sort of on the sideline, like cheering everyone on because I'm an optimist, tech optimist. I think that's exciting because that means the best will still surface, you know, that the best still rise to the top, but the best might be, you know, not somebody that is just an expert in Rhino and Grasshopper and knows exactly how to create, you know, parametric algorithms and so on. Those people are still going to have an advantage in this new realm, I think. But, you know, there might be some other people who might be less tech savvy, but have incredible ideas and are able to describe them in such a way and manipulate these tools to produce something that they could never produce before. And then who knows, maybe they team up with somebody who is more tech savvy. And, you know, that's actually a new type of architectural practice where you have somebody who's a wordsmith and you have somebody who is, you know, more adept at those sort of modeling tools. And the results could be something really magical, I think, in a way that wasn't possible before. So I think that's really exciting. And I think you're right. You know, it's not as easy as sort of it can appear on the surface when it comes to prompting Midjourney or instructing ChatGPT. You still need to have a certain vocabulary and a certain understanding of concepts. You know, you need to understand what mid-century means to be able to use it correctly, right? In the right moment.
Right.
You need to understand what modernism means, you know, what style you might get if you put in Le Corbusier or Zaha or all of these different names. Then you can start to creatively combine unexpected architects with certain regional vernaculars and get completely unexpected results, which can spark whole new ideas. And I don't think just anyone can do that. So I think in terms of reassuring the architects out there, you know, I think architects who have been trained to become very familiar with all of these ideas and these styles and this vocabulary, I think they still have the creative advantage. But I think that you just have to be brave and experiment and see where your kind of existing knowledge can be used and where you can kind of like keep this advantage going into this new era with these new tools.
Certainly, architecture will change in the future based on technology and AI. The process, clearly, as we're discussing here, the process of developing and designing architecture will change. What is your thought on the role, the actual role of the architect in the process of creating buildings? How do you think that will change in the near future?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like this is a question that architects have been grappling with a very long time, probably 30 years, maybe 50 years in terms of a slight identity crisis. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think we're sort of programmed to question ourselves all the time, right? Like from the very beginning of architecture school. So it's okay. It's okay to sort of wonder, you know, what our core value is and how that can translate, especially as everything's evolving around us with technology. I think over the last 20, 30 years, like the position of the architect has become one of a coordinator and one of a communicator more than ever. And I think that will probably be maintained. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as great as all of these tools are, there's still a huge disconnect between many of them. And like I say, you know, graphic design is one thing, but, you know, architecture, taking an idea on paper into the real world and having it constructed with the right foundations and the right materials and figuring out, you know, how the wall meets the floor and the windows slot in and, you know, how all of these tiny little details are going to be worked out. Sure, AI might be able to help us with this moving forward, but there's still going to be someone to tie it all together. And I think actually the idea of the architect is that the master builder or that, you know, the sort of the star architect, you know, designing this incredible concept and then having other people take it to reality. I think that's been dead for a while, right? It's much more, you have to be more of a people person. You have to sort of negotiate and cooperate with others, engineers, interior designers, contractors, environmental consultants, and so on. I can't really see that role going away anytime soon. So I think it's important to keep embracing the idea that architects can be the conductor of a project and there needs to be that person. You know, I don't think that AI is going to be able to glue all those pieces together anytime soon. So yeah, in a funny way, I actually don't think the architect's role will change that much. I think that there's going to be huge efficiencies and changes on, you know, the early stage of design for sure. You know, how do you come to the optimal design concept? I think this has already been for a while, like the whole idea of generative design where you can actually plug in certain project constraints and then the machine can bring you back 100 options and then it will rank them for you and say, this one's the most energy efficient and this one's the most, you know, ergonomic for your patients if it's a hospital or your customers if it's a restaurant, whatever it is. That's all very helpful. And I think that's going to change certain roles. Like I think the role of more junior members of staff, people coming out of even going through architecture school and kind of in that training phase, some of the skills that architecture students have to learn now are going to be unrecognizable to, you know, architects like myself who studied just, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So I think that part of the profession is going to change profoundly because we're going to need people to change how they think about how a design is formed and what drives that design. Yeah, but I think that the role of coordinator and the role of somebody overseeing all of the different players, all the different stakeholders, that's surely going to be the main value for architects. And I think that will be maintained.
Yeah, the human skills, right? The emotional connections, the communication skills, all those things that make us human will become even more important. They'll be differentiators of who we are as architects.
Yeah, and I think that this is something that, again, it's not new, but architecture students don't realize when they first start that, you know, they think it's all about design. They think it's all,
right.
It's really just a creative pursuit. And I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think that a lot of students are ill prepared for the fact that actually you need to understand business and you need to understand how to work with other people, because it's like the most collaborative, the most team oriented profession that there is, even with the incredible machines and the incredible technology that are coming to us. So yeah, I think that that's still going to be the challenge, is for, especially for young architects, is to know that they can't do it alone and they can't sit, even if they're brilliant with AI and they can create the most incredible images imaginable, the most amazing 3D models imaginable, that's still not going to be enough for them to achieve everything they want and see build projects. And yeah, you got to figure out how to work with others and yeah, all the politics and the kind of negotiations and the conflict resolution that goes along with all of that. So yeah, as well as AI being a new module in university courses, they should also still bring in more courses around business and around the art of working with people.
Yeah, I agree. I would say that less than half of what we do as architects has to do with actually designing and building a building. Most of what we do is about the conducting of what you were talking about, sort of the communication skills and the human skills, the business skills. If you own your own business, even if you don't own your own business, understanding business and how business works makes you a more valuable employee. It's a very important part. And one of the reasons why architects struggle so much, because they don't understand business at every level, whether they're owning businesses or not. If they understood the basics, our profession would be stronger. And so I don't want to go on that soapbox because that's my preacher coming out.
It all comes back to that. Yeah, matter what, it's a fundamental challenge that the profession has been facing for a long time. And also there's a lot of kind of struggling around, you know, how do we get paid more? How do we articulate our value more? And I think that's the key to it. That's the key to unlocking it, is really just getting everybody to think in a more sort of holistic, business savvy way about architecture as a profession, not just as a branch of design.
And being able to tell our individual stories. So it comes back to storytelling, right? It's important to understand the business side of it and the human side of it, but then be able to understand what we do and communicate it to the world individually, architect by architect, through platforms like Architizer, so the rest of the world can understand what we do, that we're not just drawing pretty pictures on paper.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think something that I love about our content, that the most popular articles, the most popular pieces are those that include the very first sketch. You know, there'll be an image of the sketch, and then there'll be an image of, you know, how that translated into a rendering or whatever it might be, a model. And then finally, the built project at the end, and sort of piecing it together and joining the dots and explaining the reasoning behind all of these design decisions in a way that is accessible to a huge audience and, you know, the potential clients that are out there. And that, again, that will not go away. Sure, AI can like produce some templated text for you, but ChatGPT is not going to be able to tell your story in the unique voice that you need on its own. So yeah, I think, you know, even in the new age, storytelling is still going to be key. It really, pulling back the curtain on your process, it makes you as an architect authentic, honest. It shows your humility. It shows the challenges you go through, but it also shows the success at the end and the value that you can bring. So yeah, I encourage everybody to tell their stories or get in touch, and we can help you tell your stories through our platform and through the awards and everything as well. Again, I like to think that's a timeless skill that I would always advocate for across the board.
Yeah. Paul, you're talking to thousands of architects, primarily small firm architects, and a vast majority of them are business owners. What would you say is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I'll give you a couple. One is me being biased, because I would say, obviously, creating a free profile on architizer.com is a great idea, because it's a free portfolio site, essentially, and it automatically links you to a community of other like-minded small practices and a ton of potential clients and collaborators as well, as soon as you have visibility there. But outside of Architizer, I think I go back to LinkedIn. I've had an epiphany about LinkedIn over the last 6 months, which is, forget all the other social media channels and just use LinkedIn. Because if you're thinking about work and business, sure, like things like Instagram are great for showcasing incredible projects. It's great, you know, it's very visually rich. But in terms of connecting with real people, LinkedIn is amazing. And you can use it, you know, not just for building connections and networking with other architects, but I think you can actually use it as a platform to show that process that I was talking about.
Yeah.
People creating content there in an honest, authentic way, a thoughtful way about their process, becoming, you know, their own thought leader. And you can do this as an individual as well. You know, I think firm pages on LinkedIn are great, but I actually love to see individuals with, you know, their real name and their title saying, you know, what they went through that week and like what was hard and what was inspiring, what they achieved. And also just being a mentor, you know, this is what I learned. This is how you can succeed as well. I think that's great. And I think, yeah, following some of these people who are really on the cutting edge of innovation and technology, it's free education. And, you know, education is very expensive, especially in the United States.
Yeah.
There are so many people giving incredible free advice and showing case studies and experiments that they're doing on that platform. So yeah, I think over time, just kind of grow your network there and just use it as an amazing place to kind of learn about business, but also about design workflows and all sorts of other things.
Yeah. LinkedIn has come a long way in the last, say, 10 years or so. I mean, it's massive evolution from what it used to be. And it really has become a primary place for community, that the feed has become a similar feed to Facebook without all the garbage and much more professional. And there's a lot of communication going on there. That's actually how you and I connected at LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly. Great example.
Yeah, it worked out perfect for everybody and everybody listening. So yeah, LinkedIn's a great suggestion. His name is Paul Keskes. You can learn more about Paul and Architizer at architizer.com. This episode's going to be released probably in mid to late March. A+ Awards should be getting close to revealing winners. Do you want to talk a little bit about A+ Awards and how we can get involved for next year?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, we're currently running the 12th A+ Awards season. By the time this goes live, it will be concluded, but we'll be in the judging stages and the public voting stages. So yeah, definitely I encourage everyone to keep an eye out on architizer.com for the big winners announcement, which will come in the spring. And it's the most inspiring day of the year, I would say. Hundreds of incredible projects, not just the winners, but the finalists. You get to see, you know, all of the front runners and, you know, all of these firms bringing new ideas to the table. And it's a visual feast. The photography is incredible. And yeah, you know, it's a year-round program. We spend a long time through the summer celebrating the winners in various different forms and in different content pieces. The winners also get to be in print in a compendium. It's like the Bible of incredible architecture that we create every year. And then before you know it, we'll be into the 13th season. So if anyone's listening and they're interested in getting updates on the program for when it opens in the fall, then we can send a link to sign up for the newsletter, and then you can make sure that your firm is involved later this year. And yeah, it'd be wonderful to have you. Everybody's sort of bringing new ideas in their own ways, regardless of whether they're a one-person firm or a 1,000-person firm. We get people from every end of the spectrum, from like a Gensler and SOM all the way down to people that just started their practice last year, and everybody gets a chance. There's a public vote, so it's very democratic. And if you create amazing projects, then you have a chance to get recognized and get published in print. So yeah, it's an exciting opportunity.
Yeah, and many, many different categories. So you should go check out the categories, because you may actually qualify for one of the categories that you may not know that you qualify for.
Yeah, so many different ones around typology, but also sort of conceptual categories. And topically, one of the newest categories is architecture plus AI. So if anybody is experimenting with AI, definitely keep an eye on the winners for that and consider what you might enter next year. Who knows what AI will look like next year? So I'm sure that category will evolve in very interesting ways.
Yeah, it will be very interesting to see what's happening with technology and AI in the next few years. It obviously will become ubiquitous. It'll be everywhere. It'll be in everything we do and everything we touch. We'll have some sort of AI built into it. It'll be very interesting to look back and look at, even using the word AI will be like carrying those big giant cell phone bricks that, you know, we're talking about it like it's this unique individual thing, but it will be everywhere. It'll just become part of our life and it'll just be part of the way we live. So it'll be interesting. Paul, thank you.
Absolutely. We'll have to touch base, you know, maybe in 12 months and
yeah,
talk about how outdated this conversation became and have a new one all about all of those topics.
I would love to do that. I'll reach out in a year and we can do it all over again. Thank you for coming by here today. And thank you for the work that you do as editor-in-chief at Architizer. You know, Architizer is a critical piece of telling the stories of what architects do. I think one of the things that we suffer as a profession is that we don't tell stories well enough. And Architizer is out there doing that for us, inspiring us to do it for ourselves and giving us a platform where we can take the work that we do and promote it and put it out there further, faster. And so thank you for that, for the work that you do at Architizer. And thank you for coming by here and sharing your thoughts about technology and architecture at the Entree Architect Podcast.
Really appreciate it. Well, I'd just like to say that, you know, Architizer would not exist without the architects, so without the projects themselves. So it's a privilege. You know, like I said at the beginning, I'm the lucky one who gets to view and tell stories about these incredible designs, all these hardworking architects like constantly iterating and innovating. So yeah, I'm fortunate and I really appreciate having the time to join you on the podcast finally, Mark. It was awesome.
We'll do it again. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link with a friend. That is the best way to help us grow. And that's how we have grown to serve thousands of architects just like you. Share a rating, write a review, but most important, share a link to this episode that you just listened to. Go send it off to a friend. I'd really appreciate it. Thank you to all our sponsors for this episode. Links to the sponsors and all the resources that we discussed today in today's episode, they're all found at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network, the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community and beyond. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to this podcast. Entree Architect Podcast select episodes are available for continuing education credit. Go learn more at gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, listen up, architects. Join us today at Entree Architect Network, the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. That's you, with monthly business training, business resources, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects. Your peers are there. Hundreds of them are there already. We will provide you with the support and the encouragement that you need to succeed. Hey, and this is super exciting. This is new, coming in 2024, Entree Architect Coaches. Yes, finally, after all these years, business coaching for small firm architects. It's coming to Entree Architect Network in early 2024. Join us. Try Entree Architect Network for free for 30 days. It's free for 30 days. Visit network.entrearchitect.com to learn more. That's network.entrearchitect.com to learn more. Try it. Come join us. Try it for 30 days. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage. Love, learn, and share what you know.
I've mentioned it to my family, but in terms of telling people like, oh yeah, we're doing this, I'm looking for projects, you got anything? Yeah. I'm not there yet because it scares the shit out of me.
Dreaming of launching your own architecture firm? Well, buckle up for a wild ride with Emerging, the podcast that shares what it's really like to start an architecture firm.
Where do we begin? We don't even know what type of business to formalize as. Is it an LLC? Is it an LLP? Like, how are taxes? I mean, the list is astronomical.
Season 1 featured founders Jeffrey, Lexi, and Chris, owners of Level Studio Architecture, are your fearless guides on this unfiltered journey from napkin sketches to a thriving studio.
One evening, stumbled into one last dive, we sat at the bar and pondered our postgraduate futures. Amidst the conversation, a napkin became the canvas for our aspirations, sketching plans and milestones, sealing our heartfelt commitment and shared dreams.
In drawing down dreams on a napkin collectively, that then, you know, in your head, you've rooted like, oh, I'm connected to these people, like long term.
The process of starting an architecture practice brims with excitement and challenges, demanding meticulous planning, flawless execution, and unyielding resilience.
I kind of hate the term because it's so overly used, but I think everybody knows imposter syndrome. And I think it's so real to this day. I don't know if it's with everybody, but with me, I'm always questioning, like, us, can we do this? Are we ready to do this? Are we prepared? Can we do it?
Did we just decide a name?
We did it, guys.
Oh my God.
The one that came out of nowhere.
Woo! It came out of nowhere. I liked it. I saw it.
Ready to turn your aspirations into reality? Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Emerging and chart your own path to architectural success.
Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say, like, that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.